Blog Talk Radio.
The whole liberation of oppressed people in the United States has to do not with climbing up some ladder to success, not for asking to be just like Rockefeller or just like DuPont or just like Ford, because that would only continue the oppression and exploitation of oppressed people in the United States, and specifically African people born and raised in the United States. Socialism is an integral part of building social justice on this planet. The condition of my people, my history, was very much connected with other oppressed people, and I began to see that.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, to whom all praise is due, whom we forever thank for giving us the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as our leader, teacher, and guide. And I specifically, ladies and gentlemen, and brothers and sisters, open up like that because I am a representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And were it not for him, you and I wouldn't be here today. In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or a repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. We have to get to the cause of it all, or the root of it all. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. But first, I would like to congratulate and give praise to the Negro, so-called Negro leaders and so-called Negro organizations. And excuse me if I say so-called, it's hard for me to just outright say Negro when I know what that word Negro really means. The person whom you have come to know as Ronald Stokes, we know him as Brother Ronald, one of the most religious persons who displayed the highest form of morals of any black person anywhere on this earth. And as one of the previous speakers pointed out who knew him, everyone who knew him had to give him credit for being a good man, a clean man, an intelligent man, and an innocent man when he was murdered. The Negro, so-called Negro organizations and leaders should be given great credit for their failure or refusal to let the white man divide them and use them one against the other during this crisis. As Reverend Welford Wilson pointed out, I think it was 8 years ago today that the Supreme Court handed down the desegregation decision. And despite the fact that 8 years have gone past, that decision hasn't been implemented yet. I don't have that much faith. I don't have that much confidence, I don't have that much patience, and I don't have that much ignorance If the Supreme Court, which is the highest law-making body in the country, can pass a decision, can't get even 8% compliance within 8 years because it's for black people, then my patience has run out. When black people who are being oppressed become impatient, they say that's emotional. Please. When black people who are being deprived of their citizenship, not only of their civil rights, but their human rights, become impatient, become fed up, don't want to wait any longer, then they say that's emotional. The Negro, so-called Negro leaders and organizations should be praised. They should be congratulated. They should be complimented. Because out of all of them combined, the white man has not yet found one who will play the role of Uncle Tom. But yet he has found no Tom, no puppet, no parrot who is still dumb enough in 1962 to represent the injustices that he's afflicting against our people. We don't care what your religion is. We don't care what organization you belong to. We don't care how far in school you went or didn't go. We don't care what kind of job you have. We have to give you credit for shocking the white man by not letting him divide you and use you one against the other. In the past, the greatest weapon the white man has had has been his ability to divide and conquer. As Jackie Robinson pointed out beautifully on the television last night, 4/5 of the world isn't white. Isn't that what Jackie said? And if 4/5 of the world is dark, how is it possible for 1/5 to rule, oppress, exploit, dominate, and brutalize the 4/5 who are in the majority? How do they do it? Divide and conquer. If I take my hand and slap you, you don't even feel it. It might sting you because these digits are separated. But all I have to do to put you back in your place is bring those digits together. This is what the white man has done to you and me. He has divided us and used us one against the other. But today, thanks to Allah, you can say thanks to God or thanks to Jesus or thanks to Jehovah, whatever you want. But as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we have been taught to say thanks to Allah. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus called on Allah. He said, Allah, Allah, lama sabachthani. I believe what's good for Jesus is good for you. If Allah was good enough for Jesus to call upon, I think he should be good enough for you to call upon. Since the so-called Negro community has shocked the white man by resisting all efforts to divide us, I think that you and I should continue to shock him by staying and working together in unity. Despite religious, political, economic, or educational, or social differences, let us remember that we are not brutalized because we're Baptist. We're not brutalized because we're Methodist. We're not brutalized because we're Muslim. We're not brutalized because we're Catholic. We're brutalized because we are black people in America. Hey, your mother is being raped and you're not supposed to be emotional. Your women, please, your women can't walk the street without some cracker putting his hands on her, and you're not supposed to be emotional. If you say that you're fed up, if you teach the Negro, people don't even know their own name. Why? Because he took it away from them.
Please, please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And if you try and tell them how thoroughly and completely they've been robbed, he says you're teaching hate. That's something to think about. Today, you are coming out of college. You're coming out of the leading universities. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hate teacher. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the tree or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Honey, please, please, please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? So I just want to clear up that little point right there, because he says that we play on your emotions. And when you turn on your television tonight, or your radio, or read the newspaper, they're going to tell you in that paper that I was playing on your emotions. Imagine you, a second-class citizen. That's not getting emotional, it's getting intelligent. And as far as your mayor is concerned, I see you should say their mayor, a man named Yorty, who has been slandering the Muslims, a professional liar, a professional liar. Who has mastered the art of using half-truths. Put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Please. James Farmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charge him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. He discriminated. Don't go near the Gentiles. Go to the lost sheep. Go to the oppressed. Go to the downtrodden. Go to the exploited. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro. To have once been a criminal is no disgrace. To remain a criminal is the disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. I went to prison because I believed in men like Sam Yardy. I went to prison because I trusted men like Sam Yardy. I went to prison following the philosophy of men like Sam Yardy. But since I've been following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have been reformed, and that's more, please. That's more than Sam Yardy and Chief Parker and all these other white politicians have been able to do with the inmates in the prisons of this state. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit for reforming and rehabilitating men whom they have failed to reform and rehabilitate.
Mayor Yardy
referred to some press report that Mr. Muhammad had once been found guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He failed to explain purposely that in 1934, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to send his children to the white schools in Detroit, Michigan that were teaching you about little black Sambo. That's the minor that he contributed to the delinquency of. You see, this vicious, fork-tongued white man has been able to take lies and make you turn against those who want to help you and make others turn against you. This is the contributing to the delinquency of a minor that this mayor, or man who calls himself mayor, is talking about. In the same article, he said that the Muslims are the same people who rioted in the United Nations. Someone should pull his coat and let him know that at the present moment, there are $6 million worth of suits leveled against two of New York's leading newspapers for making the mistake of charging the Muslims as being involved in those United Nations riots. We were not involved. And if this fork-tongued man who calls himself your mayor had taken the time to find that out, he wouldn't be walking into the trap that he's letting his ignorance lead him into. And if he would take the time to read the Washington Post that came out the Sunday after that incident took place, the Washington Post pointed out on the front page that the Muslims had nothing to do with the UN riots. And they quoted, in saying so, the person who was at that time the commissioner of police in New York City. See, it's lies that the white man has spread about the Muslims to try and make you afraid of the Muslims, or to try and make you think that the Muslims were a criminal element, an uncouth element, and things that you would not like to be associated with. Also, they say that, I'm just clearing these things up, and then we're going to get into what happened. They also say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a draft dodger. No, he wasn't. He just refused to go to the army because he was a man of peace. He was a minister of a religion of peace. He was teaching peace. So he outright refused to go to the army. That's not draft dodging. That's intelligence. Here before the grand jury. Because the coroner's jury is stacked against Negroes. The grand jury is stacked against Negroes. The press, the radio, the television, and the newspapers are stacked against Negroes. But we, the Los Angeles Police Department, is stacked against Negroes. He is stacked against all Negroes, all except those whom he has appointed to high positions. The controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is in the, on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed, whether he is educated or whether he is dumb, whether he's a Christian or whether he's a Muslim. As long as he is black and a member of the Negro community, the white public thinks that the white policeman is justified in going in there and trampling on that man's civil rights and on that man's human rights. Once the police have convinced the white public that the so-called Negro community is a criminal element, they can go in and question, brutalize, murder unarmed, innocent Negroes, and the white public is gullible enough to back them up. This makes the Negro community a police state. This makes the Negro neighborhood a police state. It's the most heavily patrolled. It has more police in it than any other neighborhood, yet it has more crime in it than any other neighborhood. How can you have more cops and more crime? Why? It shows you that the cops must be in cahoots with the criminals. The texture of the hair that God pleased, that God gave them, so much that they'll put lye on it. Do you realize? Now, you know, brother, lye will eat a hole in steel, and you know your head is not that hard. Who taught you, please? Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate, you should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you. We teach you to love the hair that God gave you. Here you way out in the middle of the ocean, can't swim, and you worried about someone that's in the bathtub and can't swim. We don't steal, we don't gamble, we don't lie, and we don't cheat. And that also deprives the government of revenue. Because you can't get into a whiskey bottle without getting past the government seal. You can't open a deck of cards without getting past the government seal. there's a white man makes the whiskey and then puts you in jail for getting drunk. He sells you the cards and the dice and puts you in jail when he catches you using them. So he's against us because we fix it where he can't catch you anymore. We take the dice out of your hands and the cards out of your hands and the whiskey out of your head. The most disrespected person in America is the black woman. The most unprotected person in America is the black woman. The most neglected person in America is the black woman. And as Muslims, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to respect our women and to protect our women. And the only time a Muslim really gets real violent is when someone goes to molest his woman. We will kill you for our woman. I'm making it plain, yes. We will kill you for our woman. We believe that if the white man will do whatever is necessary to see that his woman gets respect and protection, then you and I will never be recognized as men until we stand up like men and place the same penalty over the head of anyone who puts his filthy hands out to put in.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to us. We might not be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the big. You've got to make a decision. And the people are going to have to attack the big. The people are going to have to stand up against the big. That's what the Panthers are doing. That's what the Panthers are doing all over the world.
Fred.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner. Co-host, myself, Brother Motherland, National Minister of Defense, and our National Minister of Communication, Sister Amina, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, Bible Mythicism, Part 3. We're going to open up our phone lines for our national chairman, Black Power, all power to the people. Yahoo, Conrad, can you hear me?
Yes, my brother, I surely can. Yahoo, Black Power, all power to the people.
Yeah, right on, right on.
Okay, man, we're going to try to round that topic. We've been going on for the past couple of shows. About three weeks ago, which would have been three shows ago, we were knocked off the air or prevented from going on air. We don't believe that it was coincidence. We believe that it was by design. We believe that it was by design because we believe that we're, given the right information or the proper knowledge information. We refer to it as political education, to politicize our people so we can reclaim our lives back from this whole system of things. Some people take certain words for granted, such as oppression. Some of us have done things in our own personal lives that we can say is and was successful. But there's nothing like talking about the collective of us. And we believe that collectively that black people cannot prosper under such a system. And the system is a combination of things. Capitalism is the enemy. It's always been the enemy and will continue to be the enemy. It would appear that there may not be too many of us who really understand it, and those of us who really understand it sort of take on the responsibility to teach the rest of us. There's a book that I read quite some time ago called The ISIS Papers. And in this phenomenal book written by Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, and we had taught at Howard University in Washington, D.C. It's a fascinating book. She had pretty much taken the system of things and compartmentalized them, and then of each one, applied an analysis, a critical process of thought under the ideology or psychology or the psychopathology of whites. And one of these compartments was religion. And she talked about the psychological effects that religion can have on people. And of course, in this human world that we live in, there is what's called good and what's called bad. Good has no compromise with bad. Bad is the absolute contradiction of good. I've learned to stay away from absolutes, for absolutism can be a problem in the long run. And of course, there are some exceptions to it. So what's good is good and what's bad is bad. There have been those who have come along in history and have taken religion and used it as a weapon. Karl Marx, a German born or what have you, a revolutionary and philosopher, the understanding the system of capitalism and its tenets, he drew the conclusion that religion is the opiate of the people. And opiate, of course, is, people are familiar with that term as of late due to the opiate crisis that has been plaguing this country. And of course, opiate pretty much similar or based in the same root as the word opium, drug. There are natural drugs and there are synthetic drugs. And one of these synthetic drugs has been used to keep people in the state of slavery. Not just physical slavery, but economically, socially, politically, religiously, so forth. And that is part of why, or the gist of why, we have been doing the last couple of shows on what was referred to as Bible mysticism. And so we'll try to close it out tonight. I may be a little bit behind here, but try to get through it. We ended with talking about how the so-called Jewish people have a ideology, system, thought process referred to as Kabbalism. And this writing, this book, referred to as the Kabbalah. And inside this Kabbalah, or a part of its construct, is referred to as the Tetragrammaton, an image of a tree with a man imposed into it. And these 10 planes, these 10 levels, points, or even degrees, you know, pointed out how it is no different than what our ancestors had known, have always known as the seven planes of existence, which has been made popular or has become famous under the guise of Hinduism, Buddhism, as there has been an increase in the so-called West's interest in practicing yoga. And yoga, a part of that, is the seven levels, planes, or stages, which can be reached through a continual process of discipline and meditation, and so forth, breathing exercises, and channeling energy in an upward fashion or upward motion. And so we pointed out those seven from the base of the spine to the crown of the head or the dome, where the seventh and highest plane exists, and the sixth plane, which is between the eyebrows, referred to as the third eye. In scientific medical language, it is the congruent or parallel to, is referred to as the pineal gland, and some may pronounce it as the pineal gland. And it is through this third eye that one learns to become clairvoyant, psychic, gain intuitive knowledge that some wouldn't believe. And that there are also some whom we would not expect to indulge in such a thing, such as the CIA. And how the CIA began to take these psychics, these clairvoyants, otherwise referred to as remote viewers, and use them in clandestine operations. And it is due to their knowledge and understanding of this plane. And so these 10 planes that on the surface will sort of throw a loop, or because the number 10 and the number 7, of course, is not the same number. It don't look the same by sign, but as I explain how to get to these seven planes or to get behind it, you have to take the top three. And these top three is referred to as the unknown, wisdom, and understanding. And I ended by speaking about this unknown entity, which is the same as Christians know when we say, or those Christians, and I said we, to the point that when I was a little boy, I was raised in the church, and my mother was a Christian woman. So, but anyway, you know, remember hearing at times when people try to define God and whatnot, there would be those who would say that God is unknown. It's not meant for you to know. He only gave a limited amount of understanding or knowledge of himself. And this is where the Kabbalists get the name Ein Sof from. You would spell it something like A-I-N and Sof, S-O-P-H. Those of us who have been to college will be familiar with that second term, Sof. Because at some point in their second year or in their college years, they had become sophomores, meaning the second stage of four. And that in the beginning, this AIM entity And the word ain is like saying in, as an incapable. And of course, the N and the M share a sort of relationship where the N is just one minus loop that the M has in drawing the sign. And this is why it's also M, as in impossible. The letter N sticks from the beginning because sign language, in the early beginnings of the black man's development of speech, it used sign language. And we understand this because in what is referred to as the hieroglyphics, they preserve the signs. And so when you're waving someone off with two hands, like, don't do it, don't say anything, and that became the hieroglyphic sign, which became the alphabetic equivalent of the letter N. And this goes back to only the Lord knows when. And so this is why you have all the words or terms which are the opposite of yes or good. Stop is the opposite of go. Yes is the opposite of no. This is why you have no, nine, as in non-entity, and you put an E on the end of nine, you have none, as in none of your business. And if you take the N and the E off and put a T, this is why you have the word not, as in do not. And then you would put these vowels in front of the N, and you would have incapable and EN, which also is the negative. And this is how the people who practice Kabbalism and these people who are now referred to as Jewish and begin to write their mystical books, and they copy this name from the people in ancient Africa who also, in some sense, sees what we now call God as the unknown. And therefore, the unknown, not known, no knowledge of, and Saf is the word for knowledge, which is also an African term that the Greeks copied from ancient Africa, particularly a place now known as Egypt. This is why they have Sophos, Sophos, because the Greeks had these speech patterns where their terminologies on a lot of occasions, if not all or most, their words end in S's. And so they had taken African terms and names and learning some of these words in the language, they would leave an S on the end of those African terms. And this is how it got to be Sophos, to know knowledge. The word sober, Siba, is the word in Africa which means to know. And the sober was a teacher, and he still is. And so it was the sober in ancient Kemet inside the temples, which is where they taught, that would teach what is now referred to as philosophy. Philosophy is the word that means the love of wisdom. Philo is supposed to be the word for love, and Safi with a Y, the word for wisdom. Now, I'm saying all that to get to this. In the beginning, in our understanding the unknown, this is why the crown is the symbol, which of course it is placed on the dome of the head. And he was known as Ain Sah. And in Kemet, there's another term that our ancestors used that also represented the unknown. And many of us now know this word in the Bible at the end of prayers when you say amen, A-M-E-N. In Africa, it's the same term, the unknown. And this is how that term had gotten to where it is today. Now, there will be some who will object, some who will be in opposition to it, which is no problem. What I would suggest is researching it yourself and drawing the connections which are there, unless one's prejudice prevents he or her from looking at it from with an unbiased eye. And that was one of the names in ancient Africa when we said the unknown, the hidden one. Amin. It is not in Arabic, it's Amin. And this is how things go when people branch out and when knowledge branches out from a source. Below this Ain Sah is the other two, which when added up together is what's referred to as a triad. Christians know it as the Trinity, the three. What is it, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, or Holy Ghost? And this is the same thing. In that tetragrammaton diagram is wisdom and understanding. And wisdom and understanding were given a male and female connotation or attribute. This was done for a reason. The reason that was gotten out of nature by the ancient black people in Africa. Thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years ago. Some of us believe that the knowledge is so old that at one point that we're not even what we know as white people on the planet. Now, that may really ruffle some feathers, but we say, do your math and draw your own conclusion. We don't make up things, and we can't make the shit up. It is what it is. We only go so far as the knowledge of what our ancestors left us behind. There's some knowledge that was left behind as riddles for us to figure out a future posterity to unravel. So wisdom and understanding. Wisdom in one sense is a feminine connotation to it. And we know this as a fact because in the biblical book of Proverbs, it speaks of wisdom in the feminine sense. Let me see if I can remember this, where it speaks about wisdom had built her seven pillars, and it speaks of these pillars, of course, as being seven. We have discussed why the number seven has come to be so prominent in the understanding or the writings and the scriptures of all the religious books, or was referred to as the holy books. this number seven having to rise foremost from the seven stars that begin to stain the minds of our ancestors in Africa, who more than likely would in what is referred to as equatorial Africa. And they began to study certain groups of stars that appeared to turn around a central point in the sky at night. And this has been proven by astronomers, not like we need or our ancestors needed, or that those of us today who are familiar with this knowledge, if we need, you know, modern astronomers to prove anything. But they're so into this astronomy and observing of the stars that they'll set a camera on record and angle it in particular parts of the world or the sky, and it would record. And then they would play over periods of time, and it would appear that the stars are turning in a circular fashion, and that there's a central point. And at the central point, developed the psychology that this was the center of heaven. And this is what our ancestors had done. And imagery had also crept into the picture. And this is why they refer to now as the celestial pole, an imaginary pole that runs through the center. In other words, what they now call a lollipop, the pole with the ball of candy on top, and the stars spinning around, giving the shape of a ball, a circle. And atop this pole was the star. And the star was the closest one to this pole, therefore earned the name of pole star. And our ancestors had grouped these stars in the compartments, you know, using imagery. This is why today it's called the Great Bear in Latin, I believe, Ursa Major. And we know that bears don't have tails, but this bear in the sky has a tail. And it is the tail part of the bear that is composed of seven stars that also looks like a dipper, a scoop. And that is how it got the name. Now, there was the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. There was the Big Bear, the Great Bear, and the Little Bear. These are two constellations that are near each other. Now, these specific groups of stars appeared to turn around the closest around this pole. And there was this imaginary line like the horizon. And that if these stars are spinning, that they sunk beneath the horizon, then they would come back up and be seen again. But these particular stars turned and turned and turned and was always above this imaginary point. And so that gave the imagery of constant turning and turning and turning and turning and turning and turning. Like that Energizer Bunny commercial. It just goes and goes and goes, you know, and the commercial goes off and Bunny is still going, meaning they're trying to, you know, that's their market to get you to buy batteries, right? And so this imagery had played a huge part in the psychology of our ancestors. And so they figured that these are moving things, these are physical bodies, and that these physical bodies had to have been made by something. All other forms of physical matter. There's two types of matter. Animate matter and inanimate matter. Animate matter, the human being, because he or she can move her hands, toes, you know, and so forth. A rock is matter, but it is inanimate matter. But something had to create these things in the sky. And they had begun to gather what this thing was. And this is how they come to understand all forms of created matter, including himself. And it's because these particular stars that stood out that begin to take hold in the main part of the psychology, and there were seven of them. And there was this power, powerful entity, powerful thing. And so this eternal spinning of these stars created such things as everlastingness. And so in the hieroglyphic records of what is now known as Egypt, there's a reference to these particular groups of stars, which means the imperishable stars, the non-destructible ones. And our ancestors believed that that was the nucleus of this spiritual realm. And because of the seven, there have been some divine beings, which is what we talked about, where you see the word God in the first line of the Bible in Genesis. In Hebrew, it is written as Elohim, which is plural. The singular form of the word is what we know, which has been popularized around the world as the name for God in Arabic, Allah. That is a singular form. The term Hebrew, Arabic, and a number of languages that are spoken in East Africa, in particular Ethiopia, Somalia, Eritrea, however it's pronounced, also have languages that are related to Hebrew and the ancient languages that were spoken, which of course means that all those people were black. The Ethiopians, according to the Greeks. And so these seven had taken hold of everything. And wisdom and understanding had been around in the beginning. So says the Bible. Wisdom is referred to in the feminine sense. I have to keep out of time here. Wisdom is referred to in the feminine sense. And that it is said that wisdom had been around in the beginning before anything was. That she was with the Almighty God in the beginning. So how is that so? And why is wisdom referred to in the feminine sense? And why does wisdom have seven pillars? Now, a pillar can also be taken in the literal sense. A pillar is a tall piece of molded that can hold up a sill, an overhang or overpass. In architecture, the entranceway to a building that some may see in some of the so-called Washington, D.C. monuments or courthouses. So that in a literal sense are pillars. But these pillars are figurative pillars, sublime pillars, subtle messages of seven pillars. Now, there was some white boy named Lawrence, who had been a British agent in the late 19th, early 20th century, during the times when the British Empire was in full effect and that they were conquering lands around the world. And one particular land that they had set their greedy eyes on was now what they referred to as the Middle East. And so they sent Lawrence to a place called Arabia. And this is how he got the name or title Lawrence of Arabia. Lawrence was there learning, and he would even dress like the Muslims. And as a result of that, the book called The Seven Pillars of Arabia, Lawrence of Arabia. And these seven pillars were based on certain types of understanding, certain types of knowledge. And these seven pillars were established to do what? To serve as the bedrock, to serve, to uphold the man and the woman, or the human being. This is why it says wisdom had built her house, basically was supported on seven pillars, or predicated on seven pillars. Now, what was the house? We can take that house literally, which means the exoteric part of the scripture, or we can take that house figuratively, which is the esoteric part of the scripture. And the Bible writer was speaking about the esoteric part of the scripture. So what is the house? The house, universe is imaged as a house. This is why it says the temple of God. This is why the Bible speaks about the house of God. And this is why in the New Testament, the Logion of the Lord, or what's called the Logos, or the words or sayings of the biblical Jesus, when Jesus says himself, in my Father's house are many mansions. Now, anyone who would try to fit a mansion inside of a house, as we know it, is wasting their time. There ain't but one way to understand that scripture. When it was said that in my Father's house are many mansions, the house in the sky, which would make perfect sense now. And so what are the houses? It gets more interesting. The first houses were seven. This is why if you look at a house when you're a child, boy, girl, you start learning about images, shapes, whatnot, triangle, a square, and a circle. This is why when they would teach you to draw a house, you just simply draw a triangle and connect it to a square. And there are seven points to that house. Three to the triangle, four to the square, 90 degrees apiece. Four times nine is 360, which gives a complete 360-degree circle. That was the first form or style of house. And you can still see that today. You stand in front of a house and you'll see it using imagery. So the first houses were seven houses. These seven houses were based on seven constellations that swung around this star and this pole, and they were always visible. I can't make this shit up. And these were the center of the universal realm. And it must have been from that center that creation began. And we understand this because we know that, we're told at least, that the smallest particle known to man is the atom. And the atom has a nucleus, a proton, and an electron. And that those who created the atomic bomb, what would they do? Try to create this explosion by the manipulation of atoms. It is why it's called an atomic bomb. This is why you have to have a positive and negative charge for a battery in order for it to work. Because you charge the car. This is why we have cell phones now. And when your phone gets weak, you have to what? Charge your battery. So we know that as a nucleus. And this is the big nucleus in the sky. The center of the universe, the nucleus of the heavenly realm, from whence things had derived, had went outward. That's why people study physics, chemistry, and all this other shit, right? And there's also what's called alchemy, which gets a little bit more some more weirder or what have you, due to the lack of knowledge or having been prevented from thinking outside what's called the box. Well, alchemy and chemistry has the same base related term inside of it, the word chem. And the word chem is the same as the word chem or cam. That was the original name of what the white man calls Egypt. And Cam is a word for the black. The black soil and the black people. And they got their term chemistry from that because the people in ancient Kemet used chemistry. They knew chemistry. They knew physics and all these other things that they tried to give credit to these white boys called philosophers. They tried to give them all the credit. But they were Johnny come lately, as a matter of fact, they were students of black master teachers. This is why you understand the word for seven in Greek. Is hep, as in the heptanomes, the seven regions of the oldest division of Kemet, to the north and to the south. There were two kingdoms. And the Greeks recorded all these ancient histories, and they referred to part of Egypt as the Heptanomis, the seven divisions, the seven counties, what we call today boroughs in New York, wards in the South, New Orleans or Houston, you know, and so forth. Districts, parishes, you know, as a division. And the seven on the land was a carbon copy of the seven in the sky. And this is where they get the expression, so as what below, so is above, or so as above is below. And that is where that came from. And so these seven pillars have been put in place to preserve that. That is what they refer to as civilization. Not necessarily because they were able to build these huge pyramids that people from all over the world go see. Because the last time I checked, first five letters of the word civilization is C-I-V-I-L, civil. And to be the opposite of that is uncivil. And when you're uncivil, what do you have? Strife and everything else under the sun. Chaos, murder, killing, everything. And so this feminine nature of wisdom in the beginning, because the universe is looked at as one giant, huge womb. And we know that because in the ancient Kemetic writings, the word for the sky and heaven is the same word for vagina. Womb, opening. And so the universe is looked at in that sense. And to create, mold, fashion, shape, and to even call into existence creation, as the book John says, the first line, I can't make this shit up. In Greek, it's called the logos, the intellect, the divine one, the author of everything, the maker of everything, the maker, shaper, owner of it all. This is why you may hear Muslims, if you're close enough to them, when they're talking about the one and only true God, who's the maker and shaper and owner of it all, whom they call Allah. And so the Greeks had understood this wisdom as a woman. And so they took wisdom, the attribute of God as wisdom, and gave it a personification as a woman. But where did they get it from? They got it from Kemet. And her name to the Greeks was Sophia. This is why this name Sophia is given to girls by a lot of people around the world in English or Greek-speaking persons around the world, and what they refer to as Indo-European languages, the languages of the white people, such as French, German, Spanish, and whatnot, English, right? So this is why they named girls Sophia, because of the words that represents wisdom. And Sophia was in the Bible. Now they tell you that black people was worshiping gods, goddesses, more than one god. They lie and say we worship the cow. They lie and say we worship the bird, and particularly a hawk or a falcon. They lie and say we worship the bull. They lie and say we worship the snake, a serpent. They lie and say we worship the hippopotamus. They lie and say we worship this particular type of monkey called the cynocephalus or ape, which is just a monkey with a dog face muzzle. Cynocephalus is a word, Greek word which means dog-faced. And they keep lying and lying and lying, when in fact, all of these animals were symbols, reflections of nature. And what is nature but whom we see as God? And so they ate this particular type of monkey ape. The cynocephalus was a symbol, an animal symbol, in what they refer to as zoomorphism. Can't make this shit up. Zoology. Look it up. Animal symbolism. So this particular dog-faced monkey or miniature ape, dog-faced ape, had become an animal symbol for wisdom. And the reason why this animal had become a symbol of wisdom is because it had 10 digits, two hands, 2 feet, and that anybody who has seen an 8 round a banana tree knows that, or monkey, knows that a monkey can pick a banana tree off the batch and peel it like a human being, which means to our ancestors observing this intelligent animal was intelligent enough to do the same thing that the human being was doing. And that is how they began to correlate this monkey to some type of intelligence, that it was wise to peel the banana before eating it. And that is how that animal got to be a symbol of wisdom. And it went around the world. It went around the world so much that those of us who was in elementary school in the 70s, we were told about this monkey called Curious George. When the white people invaded Africa and Hollywood went to work, and they would make these black and white movies about some white man named Tarzan. And he would have this monkey. And the monkey was very smart and intelligent. So that is how that animal got to be a symbol of wisdom before it become a human personification and a man as a human being. In some instances, before it become completely human, it was part man, part animal. So this is why you will see in a lot of these incredible aesthetically carved statues that they found in Kemet of scribes sitting in what they referred to as the yoga position, the lotus position. When I was a boy, we called it sitting Indian style. And in this lap was a plaque, a plate. In some instances, he would take a scroll, a sheet of papyrus, and place it on top and use his ink jars and would draw signs in color, like red, for instance. And other times, they would take metal, what we call a chisel and a hammer today, and they would chisel the hieroglyphics into the slates of cement or stone, and you can see them. And as you see them sitting there in one of the statues, there's this animal that seems to sit over him, and he's watching him. In the sense, he was his instructor in the form of an animal. This was the brilliance of the black people in Kenya. If you let the Europeans tell it, they will tell you that the Africans worshipped that animal. And it will tell you that the Egyptians had all these gods. But the Muslims don't say that they have 99 gods. The Muslims say that God has 99 names. And the Christians don't say that they have all these different gods either. But where you see the word Lord, Almighty God, or just God itself, or the Most High, those are the definitions of the names that they have not put there in the Bible. Elohim is the plural form of him in his 7 forms of himself. That is why it's called Let Us Make Man in Our Image, because a man is a 7-dimensional form of himself. I can't make this up. His lowest self is the physical world, that if he stayed there, he would stay an uncivilized man, what the Greeks call barbarians. But they didn't necessarily mean someone who was that. When they were using the word barbarian, it simply means someone who didn't speak Greek, spoke a barbarian language. And then the Europeans in their expansionist era, as the imperialists they have been for the past 500 years, everywhere they went and everything that they did to the black and brown indigenous people who was there before them, they put in their books as primitives and savages to justify the treatment of them, which was savage in itself. And so that's the masculine side of this wisdom. And wisdom and understanding was a couple, and they went together. And understanding had been masculine and feminine. Now, I have a copy of this Holy Kabbalah here. Maybe we can get to some point when we graduate to a video blog or whatever. We can use some images, some stills, and to show those of us who are not familiar with this type of shit. At the top, of course, we say it was Ein Sof, who also has other names. To the left is wisdom, and to the right is understanding. And both of them are in the Bible. But here, wisdom is seen in the masculine, as what I just said. Fanning is seen in the feminine. Now, Angie Kennedy, the name for this masculine personification or wisdom of God is what the Greeks learned to call thought. Some of you may be familiar with, and also as Herms or Hermes. People from New Orleans know that name because that is the name of one of the parades that parade every year during the carnival season. And his full name was Hermes Trismegistus, which means three times great. And of course, again, they copied that from Kemet. And so Thoth, or whose more correct name would be something like Zuhudi or Tahuti, had been the personification of the knowledge, wisdom, and understanding that God possesses. A partial human, partial animal figure was created by the people in Kemet to represent this. Was a body of a man and the head of his particular bird. And this bird was chosen for symbolic reasons. And so he represented that. In one of the creation stories of Kemet, there were several of them. It is said that Tahuti represented the mouthpiece of God, whose name was now known as something like Ptah or Top, P-T-H. And of course, there's been this insertion of the letter A, P-T-A-H. And this is one of the names of God in another form, another attribute, the same as it is in Islam, Judaism, and I struggle to say that word because it is not an ancient term. Hebrewism, Hinduism, and Buddhism. The creator from his mind, who had spoken the word just as it is in John. Can't make this shit up. It's not me. And so he possessed the ability to call things into existence. And this is the same understanding that existed in ancient Africa. African people would get called pagan, idolatrous, and all the other negative connotations that the leaders of the so-called three major religions have used against her. And this may be problematic to some of us, but he represented the mouthpiece. And the mouthpiece of God is right there in the book of John. He is known as the Logos. And this is what Greek philosophy is supposed to be based on when it comes to interpreting how the universe came into being and the world and all these other things, earth and water and everything else under the sun, even the sun itself. Where did it come from? How did it start? One philosopher believed that God was an atom. Well, where did the atom come from? The atom had always been here. The self-created. Some struggle trying to understand that. Some struggle to try to understand that. And if you think for a second and believe that it is coincidence that in the Bible it says that God created the first man and his name was Adam, and that the word for Adam is supposed to be a Greek word, A-T-O-M, that's the smallest particle. And if you think that's a coincidence, then go look again. You know, those of us who possess knowledge that others don't possess, we have to be careful ourselves because our feet can come off the ground. And so I don't use words such as dumb, you know, in those types of mean terms. All of us are dumb then, if that's the case, because all of us don't know everything. I may be dumb when it comes to a car engine, but I'm not dumb when it comes to something else. This brother may be dumb when it comes to painting a house, but he's not dumb when it comes to managing money. You see? So the word was with God in the beginning. And that's the part of the understanding and the wisdom. And if you read Proverbs, she says that she was there with them in the beginning, before anything was. This is why wisdom and understanding is a couple, male and female. Now, Sophia, whom the Greeks copied out of ancient Africa, Kemet, is a branch off, a carbon copy of what they refer to something as like Sophet, or Sophet. Spell something like, without the vowels, S-F-K-H, which counts as a double consonant letter, and the T was put on the end to symbolize the feminine. So this is why in ancient Kemet, you know, you see words, terms, names, that when they're trying to show you the feminine, that this term is a feminine term, that for some reason was put on the end. This is why you see, you know, a lot of the female godheads names end with T's. For instance, in the European world, English-speaking world, dominant societies, we say Isis. Now, some of us are familiar with that term due to this so-called terrorist group called Isis in this made-up place called the Middle East. But the Isis we're talking about is the goddess Isis that some of us have heard. And that is the name of the book, Isis Papers, from Dr. Francis Press Wilson, but it was a T on the end of it, which would be pronounced something like Iset or Ist. And they had taken all of these names and turned them into Greek gods and goddesses. Can't make it up. And each one of them was a symbol of something. So Fet in ancient Kemet was the goddess of wisdom, knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. This is why she's up there. When you're looking at the tetragram, this is why she's up there to the right, at the top. At the top. And this would form the triad, the triform. Because it took understanding, it took wisdom on the part of what we know as this entity called God to create, to make, mold, and shape. There isn't a human being on this that can create something without knowledge. Of course, there's always trial and error. But you had to learn in order to create. They just didn't just go out there and just start carving stone and rectangular blocks or square blocks and just start putting them together. No, they didn't do that. First, they had to learn how to cut stone. Then they had to learn how to put them together, so much so to the point that it is said by one of these so-called Egyptologists, or this specialist in the ancient Kemetic monuments, that the blocks were squared so good that you couldn't stick a butter knife between two of them. And they didn't use mortar, you know, mud that you see today. There was a science to that. So it took wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. For the share perish for the lack of knowledge with understanding, you know, what the scripture would say. So Sophet was this goddess. And her number was the number 7. I can't make it up. As a matter of fact, the name Sophet means 7. And there's this image of her with a pole on top of her head. And at the top of this pole is a 7 red star that some would say is a 7-petaled flower. And on top of this 7-petaled star flower is some upside-down bull's horns. Now, all of that has to be for a reason. But she was the goddess 7. That's right. The feminine aspect of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. The nature of it. And here it is, number 7, is staring us in the face one more time. Again. Why the number 7? Because Sophet and the 7 stars of the Big Dipper had a relationship. Now, these, what would appear to be bull's horns, was another symbol in the masculine. And the bull was a symbol of the Great Belt, symbol of the 7 stars of the Big Dipper. Its foreleg or thigh had become a specific symbol for the 7 stars of the Big Dipper. It is because the bull represents a symbol and sign, or is an expression for power. The power of God symbolizing that bull. This is how the bull and the 7 stars correlated with one another. They didn't worship no bull. In the scriptures, it is said that the bullock was offered as a offering to the God of the Israelites, right? You know, sacrificial lamb and whatnot. Well, that was done in Africa way before any Adam or whoever. That may be hard to believe for some, but I can't make this up. So the bull was a symbol of the power. Of course, the bull is a virile animal. The bull has its, the bull will make two or three of the cows, you know. This is why farmers, they have a bull. Bull is like the key to their lifestyle, And it became a symbol of virility. Bull that impregnates. Power, which came correlated with the two-legged bull, the man. The four-legged cow has a human counterpart in the two-legged cow, which is the one. And so it goes back to that number seven, and this is how she got her name, her number, her symbolizer, and then the seven laws, the seven pillars, the seven codes. There's what's called the seven codes of Bushido among the Japanese samurai. And the East Asian people had developed this whole psychology, this whole mythical stories based off of that. And these were the seven divine ones, the seven wise ones who became the seven defenders, the seven heroes, the ones who had good luck. Therefore, this is why we say the lucky number seven. And this is why the cereal producing people have a box of cereal called the Lucky Charms. It was seven of them. And if done correctly, these seven divine ones can bring good tidings to one. And this is why they developed customs in East Asia. And there were no more, no less than miniature reflections of the seven Elohim. And in Kemet, it was the same thing. In another creation story version, this time it is the name Ra, or Re, R-E. Of course, we're talking about the sun, energy, and everything else. And as a result of that, this is why you have what's called radio. This is why you have what's called sun ray, and the name Ray. Raymond. This is why these names pretty much are masculine. We had the great Ray Charles and so forth. Radii, which you're talking about mathematics, geometry, the power of the sun. The sun was another symbol of the power of God. But Europeans, if you let them tell it, they will say we were worshiping the sun. And then before that, we was worshiping the moon. And before we was worshiping the moon, we was worshiping the stars. But how could that be? When in the Old Testament, one of the names of God is the Lord of hosts, Sabaoth, which has that ending on the end, which pluralizes. One's masculine, one's feminine. Translated as host instead of stars. But another name or sublime word for stars is host. Look it up. I can't make shit up. One of the sublime terms for stars is host. So therefore, he was the Lord of the stars. God of the stars. So why they don't say that he worshiped the stars? But they'll say that the Africans was worshiping the stars, when it is in fact the same thing. One's the mother, one's the child. Genesis has these things in it. Now, some way for explanation as to why the things in Genesis seem to be the twin brother or twin sister of the things that are in the hieroglyphics, and they'll say, well, duh, does it not say that Moses has learned in all the ways of Pharaoh? And that, to my understanding, when I was a little boy, I was told that Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. So we say, okay, because we know Moses himself was black. Moses was an Egyptian. Moses was an Egyptian so much so that some of us believe that Moses is a Hebrew word, a Hebrew name. But the name Moses is actually an African word. And it has several meanings. See, the Egyptologists found these two signs, the equivalent of an M and an S, and they put an E inside of the letters, and so you would say mess. But in actuality, the Africans use an O. And this is how it got to be most. And one of the names of one of the coldest MCs of hip-hop is who? Mos Def. And we would say M-O-S-E, Mos. And you find his name in some of the names of the pharaohs. Ramses first, Ramses second, and so forth. Tutmosis, which is actually Zehutimosis. And this is where Moses got his name. And of course, when he came to defense of one of his brethren, you know, he killed them. And he fled to the land of Midian, which is over in Arabia. And Jethro's daughters were watering the flocks, and they were trying to get the water, and Moses came and he helped them. And they went back and they fought. It was like, how did y'all come back so quick? And he said that an Egyptian helped us. They didn't say an Israelite helped them. They said that when it was an Egyptian that helped them. Now, some may say, well, that's because they were speaking about his nationality. Although I am an African, they will say by nationality, I am an American, and I will still object. Like the Europeans that's over there in Southern Africa, calling themselves Africans. But when you take a much closer look at it, they did not mistake Moses for no nationality. They mistake Moses for an Egyptian, because the Egyptians was black too. Then, to make matters worse for all of these white supremacists, always portraying Moses as a white man in the movies and the cartoons, Moses made it even worse for him. He married an Ethiopian woman, and guess what? She was one of the daughters of Jethro. So what did that tell you about the Midian women whom Moses helped? They were black women. And so Moses possessed this knowledge. So that's why we say, or there will be those who say, that's the reason why you see these parallels in ancient Kemetic spiritual psychology and philosophy in the book of the Bible and the hieroglyphic writings. And we say, okay, no problem. So it is Sophek the seventh, the goddess seven. In one story, she had seven children. And these children were her divine ones, and each one of them represented a pillar of something, which is also referred to as the seven laws of Maat, M-A-A-T, the equivalent of three signs. Or four, depending on the letter A having more than one hieroglyphic equivalent. But if you take the T off, it is M-A-A. And one of the signs for that is like the eye, to know, to see, a seer. One who knows, one who can pierce into things. Because he had understood the sixth plane. He wasn't using these things literally. And so the feminized ma, they put a T on the end. Became a feminine symbol. And this feminine symbol had become a personification in physical form. But before that, it was a particular bird and the bird's feather. And after that, it became personified as a woman with wings. And so this is where they get the seven pillars from. In the academic world, it is referred to as the seven liberal arts. And the seven liberal arts is a story that the seven liberal arts are portrayed as seven women. Feminine. And there's this later book called the Pistis Sophia. Pistis is the same or similar to as what you call the Epistles of John. Epistle of Corinthians 1 and 2. So the Pistis Sophia, and when you read it, it is coded in sublime language. And this type of knowledge was learned in certain circles that are now today referred to as the Eastern Stars in Freemasonry, the women faction or the women's sector of it, whereas you call the Freemasons, the Scottish Rite, the York Rite, and guess what? The number seven looms large there. They have what's called the seven royal arc degrees. Now, what is a royal arc? You could only have gotten that arc by observing the bodies in the sky. Some of us may have been to St. Louis and visited the giant arc that stands aloft in the sky. And that is considered to be the gateway to the West and how the West was won. The Midwest, you go through that gate, which is symbolic. Because if you went through that gate, you entered what's referred to as the underworld. And that's when your quest began. You went through seven stages, seven chambers, seven halls, whatever you want to call it. And at each one, you dropped off a piece of physical filth that had been holding on to you for the longest. And these seven stages you went through, you had to know a particular word, a term, or expression to enter each one and to be allowed to go through each one of them till you reached the seventh one. And right on the other side of that was the entrance way to what the Greeks called the Elysian Fields. And in the city of New Orleans, there's an avenue called Elysian Fields. And it was done subliminally. Because if you take Elysian Fields, you would head to what's called Lake Pontchartrain. And going down Elysian Fields, the houses become more exquisite and more exquisite and more exquisite and more exquisite. Because that is a symbolism of a physical paradise on earth where the wealthy live. And of course, the Greeks copied all of that too. The Isles of the Blessed. And at each one, you had to know a particular word and recite something. And you come face to face with something after the seventh one. As you come face to face with something, when you reach that seventh stage at the top of your dome, and your dome is a symbolism of the universe, This is why in ancient Kemet they painted the ceilings dark blue. And they portrayed the constellations that mattered to them the most in those ceilings. And they were very sophisticated. And this is the origin of it all. Ancient Africa. The people in Kemet, they just recorded better than anybody else. And it spread around the world. There are those who would debate and argue and say that the Babylonian civilization is older, the Sumerians are older than the Egyptians. As a matter of fact, they taught the Egyptians and whatnot, which is a lie. And they would say, well, the Sumerians had was referred to as the Anunnaki, meaning those of heaven and earth, the divine ones. But what they don't tell you is that there were seven of them too. The seven divine ones who were around in the beginning. So the Pisistophia, no more, no less than the writings of the ancient Kemetic Godhead, female Godhead known as Sophet. And she was the master of letters and numbers and mathematics, science and philosophy. She gave her name to that science, philosophy. She gave her name to it. And so they're around the world studying the seven liberal arts, taking them up. And one of those is geometry. What is geometry? In Masonic language, you have to know geometry, the measure of a man. For a man to know how to square himself, which is the sublime partner of the physical masons who build structures. Like these cathedrals that you see are 500, 600, 700, 800 years old in Europe. They were masons. And the day you see the Baptist churches, if not every church, most of them do have what's called a cornerstone. The Islamic mosque, the center of Islam in Mecca. The great mosque, the great open-air mosque, where they got what's called the Kaaba shrine, the big tall cube, that they go around this cube in mass, thousands of them, one huge mass going around. And this has been, you know, like filmed from above, and you see all these Muslims. Guess how many times they go around this cube? You can't lose. Seven times. That's what's called the Tawaf. T-A-W-A-F. They perform the Tawaf. And they take these stones, in another sense, and they got this other thing where they toss them at this imagery or this symbol of the devil, and they're stoning him. But they go around this thing seven times. And the Kaaba shrine is a symbolic representation on earth of what they imagined in the sky as the celestial pole. I can't make this shit up. So much so that in certain Islamic mystical writings, they say that the Kaaba shrine lies directly under the pole star. And this, there's a stone that lies in the corner, the northeast corner. I can't make this up. Now, that star in the sky that sits aloft this imaginary pole, it is also referred to as the North Star. There's a hockey team, and I can't make this up. There's a hockey team, if they still exist, referred to as the Minnesota North Stars. Get a map and see where the state of Minnesota is. And this same star is what our ancestors used to escape the plantation and make their way north and cross over into Canada. That's why it's called the North Star. And they would follow this star. Incredible. And so this black stone is said to have been from heaven, from above, a black meteoric stone. And that Abraham is given the credit for having built the shrine and placed it in the northeast corner. Now, what's so interesting about that is in Freemasonry, the north don't have no light. It's the dark place. It is in the east that the worshipful master sits. You know, you see that statue of, man, we're running out of time. We can go one more week. We'll be back. 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. In Defense of People Radio, I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat, a co-host, Brother Butterland. I'm in the defense, and I saw a technician on the ones, too, Stamina Oshun. I meant communication. We'll be back next week. Black power. All power to the people. You're all rule.